This is a CC Radio podcast.
Welcome to episode 328 of the Countdown Podcast, the show with two judgmental bitches talking film and penis. My name is Wayne.
Not in that order. My name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness so you don't have to. And today is our top 10 last
thing. Especially today, yes.
Yeah, a regular feature on the show where once every once a quarter or so, give or take, we count down 10 films we haven't had a chance to talk about on the show. In my case, it means I have to pass through some many, many films that I've watched. In Wayne's case, he's like, with 3 days to go, shit, I've got to watch 5 movies.
Absolutely, and I don't know how you do it, Paulie. I don't know how you do it.
In effect, we count down 10 films from worst to best. Nothing linked between them other than the fact we happen to have watched them recently and never spoken about them on the show before.
How'd your list go this week?
Good.
Really?
Very good.
Mine did not go well, Paul. It did not go well at all. I stand resolute, motherfucker.
Yep. Welcome to the soundboard. Great to have you here as well. Now, Wayne, let's be clear here. My top 5 are in my top 10 films of the year thus far.
No so fucking way.
Half of my list is really, really good. A couple of them are absolute pants because we always love to shit on a film or two in the top 10 last 10. And then there's a couple in the middle that, eh.
Okay. Every single fucking one of mine, right? Actually, wait. My number one I genuinely like.
All right.
But it's like the kind of movie that I would like. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. So see how you go with
it. So you're saying the other 9 you wouldn't recommend?
Well, I've always struggled with the linear nature of this.
No.
Of the whole, you know, like, when do you start recommending? Well, some I put high. I don't necessarily recommend them.
Whoa.
Absolutely makes sense. Because sometimes...
Do you understand the fucking concept of this show?
You're not saying...
My guess, give or take, is the 25th time we've done a top 10
last
10.
No, listen up. Here it is, right? Just because you liked a movie out of the last 10 you watched the most, right?
Yeah.
To recommend that movie to someone is not always the case. You might go, this is good for only people who are like me. And Paul, there's fucking no one like me, right? Fortunately. But you don't recommend it, but it is the one you like. So you see, it's a bit back and forth, man.
Well, I didn't.
Yeah, I know, your fucking robot brain doesn't fucking like that.
Between this is recommendable and this is not.
But you might like... When's the last time you... What's a guilty pleasure of yours, right? Some piece of shit movie that you like for some reason and no one else likes it.
Well, probably my number 5 on my list today might fall into that category.
Okay. Yeah. So you see, if it's like, oh man, no one likes... Like, for instance, there's a really good One Direction song called Steal My Girl.
You're mocking me.
It's a really great song, but I'm not going to recommend it to you because fuck you.
Because fuck me.
That's right.
What are you, a fucking moron?
But of course, I like it. So you see, I think this makes total sense. Anyway, that's just one guy talking.
All right, well, we'll get into that on the other side of the segment that kicks off most every show. It's called The Recount.
Who wants a recount?
Who?
Who wants a recount?
Who?
Who wants a recount?
Who?
Who wants a recount?
Who fingered me this week, Paul?
Actually, no one.
What?
Or technically 36 people fingered me. Because that's the number of votes you accumulated for the top 10 female-directed films. Well done. You beat me comfortably. 36 votes to 25 on the week.
The folks are being kind to me again and don't think I don't appreciate it.
12, 9, and 1 on the year. Some of the comments about that. It was close, according to Michelle Dono, between the guys this week. But for me, I ended up voting for Paul. However, Choice Binder said both of you had sold this and both had my top 3, but Wayne had them higher. So that seals the vote. Hashtag don't blame the voting block, Paul.
There you go.
More than fair enough. Jonathan Lamb said, I'm not a big fan of Zero Dark Thirty given the controversy surrounding it. Gonna have to go with Paul this week, though I did like Clueless and Lost in Translation as your picks, though.
Nice. Hmm. I'll take it.
Look, James Newman said, The Invitation is one of the best films I saw last year. Wayne's World had a big cultural influence when I was a teenager. Paul collects my vote this week.
Sure.
However, clearly, you got more. And John Snow, Julio from The Contrarian said, Wayne had enough said as an honorable mention, which is better than not having it at all. Sold this all round, though.
All right.
Yeah, who would have thought that would get you a vote?
No, not me.
Joe Morris, G-Banger, from 2Bs on a podcast, said, Emerald Fennell deserves better, but still good at guys, because both of us had Promising Young Woman lower down than a lot of people thought that we should have it. And the final word, though, again, let's be clear, you won by a lot. goes to our friend Smiley Samani, who said, the fact you both had one director multiple times with both your lists, which, considering how many brilliant movies there are by female directors, was, I think, a pretty poor showing, lads. Because of this, I decided to abstain from a vote. Well then, Wayne, good old Wayne, opened up his lips and called me a bloody Kiwi. Paul gets a vote because Wayne's a poo-poo face.
Worth it!
Thank you so much for your feedback, Wayne. Comfortable victory. Well done, sir, on this one.
Thank you very
much. No vote for the top 10 last sentence because we're not coming at it from the same pool. The vote will be back next week when we get into the topic, which we'll announce at the end of today's show. And that's it for a very short recount. Good, because we generally spend a bit longer on the top 10 this week.
Damn right.
In our latest top 10 last 10, colon, mid-year edition.
Fuck off.
The top 10 last 10, mid-year edition.
Sexy as hell, man.
Is the subject of this week's countdown.
Nice.
All right. Shall I go first, Wayne?
Yeah, man. Hit it.
All right. As you are all aware, we will give you the... Apparently, Wayne will not recommend anything beyond or below.
I'm playing jazz this number week, two. Folks.
My number 10, I certainly do not recommend. It is a massive piece of shit Australian film from director Martin Wilson. That household name, it's called Great White.
What's this?
It is a terrible, terrible shark
film,
killing
I imagine?
People movie. With a trailer which is mildly competent. Now, one of the worst shark films of all time is Jaws, The Revenge.
The Revenge, right.
Right? Yep. That shark leaps out of the water towards the end of the film, roaring with rage.
Yeah.
This film, the shark roars multiple times.
Out of the water?
Yeah.
Really? Mm. And what does it grab in its jaws?
Generally speaking, it tries to grab people and
okay,
eat them.
Okay, fine. All right, so what's the problem with this one?
Oh, that alone should be enough to indicate to you how shit this film is, but
it's
all the terrible trappings of a shark film where we've got, you know, there are some really good drone shots of the movie. That's it. There's some drone shots.
Hey, I know people who can do that.
A light aircraft flying, you know, over crystal clear, you know, color corrected waters. Okay. Beautiful. They look great, those shots. But the fucking film and the characters in it and their idiotic decisions and the thing that the shark can do are mind-bogglingly awful. It's...
Why are we,
subpar acting,
sure.
Horrendous script with just some of the worst dialogue and characters you could possibly imagine. Do you remember the girl from Tucker and Dale versus Evil?
Yeah, one of the girls.
Katrina Bowden, I think her name is.
I think I do.
She's the main actor in this.
American girl in an Aussie movie.
Yeah.
Funny you should mention
she's
this.
She's with an Aussie guy who runs this charter company.
Yep, that's how you write that
Very
movie.
Rich. Asian couple take them on it and then they run afoul of a shark when their light aircraft gets bitten by said shark and it's just fucked.
Wow.
It's so bad. It's like slap your face. I love shark films. Like for some reason I feel compelled maybe because of Jaws.
Yeah, you like that Blake Lively
always,
one.
Yeah, I really, really like The Shallows. That's a really great film. This is not. It is complete garbage. It will probably be my worst 10 of the year.
Oh, excellent.
Great White.
Great White. Fantastic. All right. Well, my number 10 is a film. So check this out, right? Like way back in the day, like maybe a year ago or something, it seems like, I heard about this Pierce Brosnan film.
Oh, not The Misfits?
Dude.
I got 7 minutes in and shut it off.
Dude, I know why. All right, so everyone, The Misfits is this film, but yeah, Pierce Brosnan's in it. That's all I knew, and it's the only thing that got me there, okay? And it's about him. The reason it looked cool to me is that he was playing what appeared to be, from the trailers, a James Bondian-esque character. It turns out the actual character he is playing is a renowned criminal thief who is now in his sort of like decline. No, I mean, you know, he's Twilight, whatever. He's like fucking 60, right? And a group of unconventional young thieves, including Nick Cannon, who is Mariah Carey's wife.
Is he the guy that's doing the voiceover?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God. All right. So this is what happens. Those young thieves are actually Robin Hood type thieves where they go to big corporations and steal a shit ton of money and then they give it to charity and they never do it for them. And they've got wicked machinery and planes and shit and all that crap. And
so they invest a bit to themselves, clearly.
Yes, and they're skilled. One's a hacker, one's your mother's snatch, whatever, right? It's just fucking shit. It's just like, you know, they've all got a role and that kind of shit. So, I mean, one's a good
The one that's thing. Playing your mother's snatch.
This oddly hairy character. Okay.
You know, no one is laughing except you and I.
I know. Everyone's going, you idiot. You shut it off already. Okay. everyone, here's the problem with this film, right? It's played oddly comedically. Like, it's not necessarily in a way that works. Like you said, the voiceover is Nick Cannon, who's... And it, like... He's doing the voiceover himself, and it's weirdly funny or stupid sounding, and it doesn't seem authentic. And he's playing... I'm trying to say this in the most PC way I can. He's playing such a quintessentially the black gangster character, right? That it becomes like a parody of himself, because of course he is black, right?
Yeah, yep.
But it sounds like he's doing a caricature of it, and that's how shit the execution is. It looks low budge, incredibly shitty dialogue, right? And the dude, just overplaying the hep cat, like bullshit kind of cool guy thing. I don't know why, if it's bad because of the writing or because of the delivery of
all
of
the above, all I would suggest. Things. Without having seen more than 7 minutes. But this film is coming to the cinemas, I think.
Bro. Because think about it, right? It has actually got the odd star, too-ish, right? If you count Nick Cannon, right?
I don't count Nick Cannon as a star. Well,
I think he's the host of, like, American Idol or some shit. Anyway, so...
See my previous point.
Yeah, you know, I know. Pierce Brosnan is doing what he can, but this... It looks to me like he's embarrassed to be in this film because everything is so... cliche bullshit shit. It does have some quite exotic locations. It's set in the Middle East, all right? And that's a waste because the whole thing looks and feels like a music video and a bad one. Then the whole... Tim Roth is in it too. Sorry, Tim Roth is in it too. Not one joke lands, nothing rings true. I get to the end of the film and, dude, do you know who directed this? Rennie Harlan!
Wow.
And do you know who wrote it? Kurt Wimmer.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
No, hang on a sec. Kurt Wimmer did Equilibrium, and I love that movie.
Yeah, but Kurt Wimmer also did Ultraviolet.
He's so shit, man, right? He's got one... He's the Antoine Fuqua of writing. He's got one good film in it. But Rennie Harlan...
So now you're not being Fuqua, you're being
Wimmered. Dude, you know what? Rennie Harlan, man. Rennie Harlan, fucking Die Hard... No, what's his name?
Die Hard 2.
Die Hard 2.
And Nightmare on Elm Street 4.
Shit, Cliffhanger. Really? All that shit, right?
Yep.
It's like he forgot how to make a film.
Pretty sure he did the FBI serial killer profiler film, Mindhunters, not the Mindhunter.
Not the one.
With David Fincher.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that was what it was called back in the early 2000s.
Yeah, Red Dragon. Yeah. I know that. But that's the thing, though.
Cutthroat Island, Rennie Harlan.
Dude, more on that in a second. This is what Quentin Tarantino was talking about, okay? You get to a certain age and you can't make fucking movies anymore. I don't know what it is, man. That's what's going on here. And by the way, have you seen Kurt Wimmer? Have you actually seen the guy?
No. I just assume he looks, for some reason, in my head, looks like William Fichtner.
He is impossibly handsome.
Really?
Kurt Wimmer, if you Google a picture of him, it looks like he was carved from God's semen. I don't know. It's just like...
In a way, I'm glad because it means you can't have everything in life.
Yes. But you know what? This good-looking, handsome motherfucker is still a Hollywood writer, as if he wasn't getting pussy before. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but it's not all about that, Wayne.
No, but do you know what I mean? Like, I think he's as happy as a man can be, even though he's not that great a writer. He still wrote Equilibrium.
Yeah, but one claim to fame, which most film fans have not seen nor appreciate in the way that we do.
Yes. I suppose...
What else has he written? Have you got that there?
Well, you said Ultraviolet. No, I haven't got it here, sorry. He's done a lot of shit, for sure. And literally, Equilibrium is probably the only good one.
Yeah.
So... All right. I don't know. Still most people do.
So, out of 100, Wayne, what would you give The Misfits?
Oh, fuck. Shit. 5. I'm going to give it 5. It's a piece of shit. You know how you lasted 7 minutes?
Yeah.
I only kept watching because I had to watch a movie for the fucking show.
I was like 7 minutes already. If I start something else, damn it, that's 7 minutes I've lost.
7 minutes behind. So that's what happened here, bro. Yes, so there you are. The Misfits. Don't do that.
Yeah, all right. There we are. That's the strongest possible word of warning.
If it hits the cinema, I can't imagine it will. Honestly, it's too bad. Anyway, go on.
All right. My number 9 is a film which was meant to be great, but to my mind, when you not just homage, but rip off a classic film, you're already doing yourself and your audience a disservice. Uh-oh. And that is what The Woman in the Window is.
What's this?
It's a Netflix film which it acquired during the pandemic. This was meant to go to cinemas. It stars Amy Adams as agoraphobic woman. Agoraphobic woman, sorry. Yep. I was confused. They spelled one way and it says the other.
Are they do different things?
What's agoraphobic?
No, they're the same thing. Fear of open places.
Yeah, agoraphobic. I know what that is. Yep, so, yep, yeah, but agoraphobic. Okay,
but cool. It's spelled agoraphobic.
Oh, is that so? Sense
it looks agoraphobic. Is how it's said.
Yeah. Cool.
Anyway, long story short.
Sorry.
She is there and she's being serviced by her psychiatrist, played by Tracy Letts, who's a playwright himself. And I think he was responsible for writing this film, if I'm not mistaken.
Is his name, is the dude, is Tracy?
Yes.
Yeah, he
was the guy in Ford versus Ferrari.
Oh.
The owner of Ford, I think.
Yeah. I know exactly who it is.
So that dude. So he pops up and he's usually a pretty good actor as well. And obviously a multi-talented individual. Amy Adams, we know her pedigree. We know how good she can be. And what basically happens is she witnesses what she thinks is a murder in the house across the street. So we're totally ripping off here, Rear Window.
Yeah. Right? Hitchcock, yeah.
Played so similarly. Now, it's directed by Joe Wright, who's done a whole bunch of films, including like Atonement and Pride and Prejudice. He's got this very, he did Pan, Hannah.
Yeah,
which is probably his best film.
Great, as far as I'm concerned. Film.
And then he directed Gary Oldman to his Academy Award winning performance in The Darkest Hour. So he's got a good pedigree behind him.
This sounds good, bro. What's going on?
Well, one, it's a ripoff, and it really shits me that to the point where, from vague memory, they're even showing a Hitchcock film on the TV early, like, oh, here we are.
So at least nodding to it, saying, I know we're doing this, just chill.
Gary Oldman plays the guy across the street that she thinks murdered someone, and everybody here is on autopilot except Amy Adams, who's trying her hardest. Like, I really have to.
Really?
They've really messed her up and doled her down, sorry, you know, so we're showing someone who's really badly affected by her mental health issues.
Okay.
That rings true. But it is such a stage play script in this basically one apartment.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's so, the dialogue is terrible.
There, see, if you haven't got scene, you better be good dialoguing.
The characters are, other than her sort of character, whatever, are just, you use the word earlier, I'll use it again, caricatures, right?
Yeah.
Nothing rings true in this movie. And then there's a big twist which happens, which you're meant to be taken aback by, and you're left scratching your head going, uh-huh.
Really? No affection. So, this is something I call serenity syndrome, where I don't know what's going on behind the camera, but the characters seem to be in like a 1920s radio play. There's a layer on top of it.
Probably not quite that bad.
But kind of shit.
But then it veers to this weird schlocky horror film in the last 20 minutes of the film, and not in a cool way like Sunshine did.
Yeah.
But in this really on the nose, like, where has this come from?
It doesn't work.
Not like, oh, here's someone who gets a bit of a garden implement through the face. I'm like, whoa. This film does not work. It got dumped onto Netflix. Netflix probably got a lot of views out of it. It probably worked for them. In the cinema, it would have tanked massively. It's a terrible misfire. It's a terrible film.
That's hard.
Don't bother watching The Woman in the Window.
I never even heard of this one. You know what movie did rip off Rear Window kind of back in the day, and
Disturbia.
It worked? There was Disturbia, but there's also this really one. There's one with Alec Baldwin and Nicole Kidman in it called, and I can't remember the fucking name now.
Nothing but Malice, right?
Yeah, that one.
No.
Dude, there was a kid in the window who they thought, and at the end of the movie you find out that he's, spoilers, blind.
For Malice, for 30-year-old film, sure.
Blind. But the whole movie is predicated on he witnessed them. So you're right. It's not
the one where he's saying, I'm God.
Yes, that's the one. Okay. That's the one, yeah. So anyway, play. Yeah, nice work.
All right.
My number nine, now look. I came across this film, and it's an Australian film, and it's an Australian sci-fi film.
Ooh.
It's called Occupation Rainfall.
Oh, have you seen the first one, Wayne?
There's a first one? Are you kidding me? I thought this was
Tamira Morrison, right?
Yeah. I didn't know this was a sequel.
I watched, it's like 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago.
Oh, dude. All right, well, let me show you what this one's about, everyone. It's set in Sydney, and it's a sci-fi epic. Well, film. All right? And it's about 2 years into an intergalactic invasion of Earth.
The first
obviously
one showed
set up
you
by the
said,
first one.
Said intergalactic invasion.
Survivors fight back in a desperate ground war. This was a sequel?
Yeah.
So someone knew what was going to happen and they made it anyway? All right. So basically people die and shit, right? And there's some unexpected allies and there's aliens and there's fucking space battles and shit. And I don't care, right? That's what it is, right? This film, dude, it's got like this one star, Ken Jeong, if you want to say star, all right? Ken Jeong from like The Hangover. Like,
he wasn't in the first one.
Okay, so he's in this one. Dude, he's on the poster, all right? Tamir Morrison is also in it, of course, and now that I know he's in the sequel. There is also, do you know who Jason Isaacs is?
Yeah.
He's in it.
The bad guy from...
Yeah, the Patriot.
Patriot.
Him. He's in it.
And about 40 films in between then and now.
Yeah.
I do know.
You're killing me, Smalls.
I'll tell you this though. I don't know where who he played. I could not tell you which one he was. Right. It was a very dark movie. And okay, to be honest, I'll say this, right, because I actually don't want to shit on it, because I found out that the budget is $25 million Australian dollars, which is roughly $200 American.
and also about 200% of the entire Australian film industry budget.
Yes, this is the big thing, right? Because whoever made this. First of all, my mind is blown that it's a sequel, because
I think this is going to make $25 million? Because the first one is rat shit.
Okay, well, there's a little bit of a play in Hollywood, and that's how indie films get made. If there's too many rich people, they go to their accountant and they say, hey, I need a fund that loses money so I can offset my tax. So I think that's how this shit goes, right? I don't know. The point is, $25 million, well done, mate. Right? Especially now.
Looks
right?
better than 25. You're saying it looks pretty good for 25 million.
The CGU battles of the air and land are not bad. I will say that, okay? But it's sort of amateurly made because it's hard to tell what's going on. The makeup on the aliens is okay, but the creature design is horrendous. It's a big dude who looks like he's got this mask on. I'm an alien mask on, and it looks shit out. He's got big eyes and shit, right? Yep. They really lean into the Aussiness. Like, the team is called Drop Bear Actual. That's funny, right?
That gets a half staff.
No, that is actually the best thing about the film. You Americans, there's a long story about Drop Bears.
Yeah, we don't have time for it.
Yeah, we don't. Sorry. Anyway, look, laughably bad. Just laughably bad. Mm-hmm. And Ken Jeong is in it for 12 seconds.
Does he die?
He doesn't die. He just disappears from the first scene. He's like, hey, everyone, I'm locking on this ship. I've got some dialogue. Bah, 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 bah. And then you never see him again.
Wow. Yeah, there's $250,000. Thanks, Ken.
Right there. So yeah, Operation Rainfall. Oh, sorry, Occupation Rainfall. Fuck it off.
You sure there's not a colon in there?
There is a colon, unfortunately.
All right. My number 8 is really disappointing. We talked about a little bit, like we actually at one stage had the Misfits on the review schedule.
I know. That's why I remembered it. I went, oh, this one's up.
Here's another one we had on the schedule, which I then said, no, let's just take it off. I'm talking about Taylor Sheridan's Those Who Wish Me Dead.
Now tell me about this one.
This is a film starring Angelina Jolie
as
a firefighter who does the drop-in, the most dangerous firefighters in the world. Can't remember.
Oh, the Howie Long. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And basically, she's the best of the best, blah, blah, blah.
Really? Angelina Jolie is the best firefighter in the world?
Well, in this particular crew, and everyone admires her complete... And yeah, well, yes, they do that. but they do. The film makes a point of the fact that they're all trying to sleep with her.
Sure.
But beyond that, they admire how, like... She doesn't give a fuck. She will go to the nth degree and do things that no one else would dare to do. So that's kind of her character in a nutshell.
All right.
Meanwhile, there's this kid and his dad and Aidan Quinn.
Aidan Quinn. I like me some Aidan Quinn.
Aidan Quinn, no. Aidan, Aidan Quinn, what's his name?
Is he from The Assignment or?
Aidan Gillen.
Aidan Gillen. Sorry.
Aidan Gillen, who is Littlefinger from.
Oh yeah. I like him too.
Game of Thrones.
Crockett, yeah.
And Nicholas Holt are two basically assassins who are trying to kill a bunch of people who know some shit they shouldn't know. This kid's dad is target number like 2 or 3. And the dad goes on the run to the forest where Angelina Jolie happens to be.
Yeah.
Shit happens. Kid and Angelina Jolie hook up. And she decides she's going to try and save him from these assassins who light a fire to flush them out. Meanwhile, John Bernthal is in the film.
John Bernthal's in it!
Yeah. So look, it's got the ingredients.
Hey, this sounds all right, bro. Yep. Obviously, it's not.
Watch it.
Really?
It's so lackluster. Like, you know, Taylor Sheridan obviously wrote Sicario.
Yes.
Pretty sure he wrote the second Sicario, but he also wrote and directed Wind River, which was really good.
Yes, excellent.
This film was such a letdown. And maybe my expectations were too high. It's one of those films that Warner Brothers released day and date into cinema and onto streaming because of the pandemic.
Really?
So you can check this out wherever you want to now. Good luck to you, is all I'll say.
May I say that you've mentioned Angelina Jolie 3 times in this review. And the first time she wasn't French, but she got more and more French as you said, Jolie. So well done on starting making her
What's
American.
Your point?
You always make her French.
Jolie.
Okay, good. Good stuff. Great. All right. Nice one. Thank you. My number 8 is a movie I should have known.
You should have known about everyone so far.
I should have known about everyone. Oh, I don't know. You Misfits. We were going to review it, yeah? Anyway, this one's called, it's a Netflix film called, well, it's a Will Ferrell film, Paul. And it's called Eurovision Song Contest.
Oh, that's a while ago,
The Story of Fire Saga. Now, it's...
I saw the trailer, I saw the premise, and I went, no, thank you.
I understand. I read on an website somewhere that this is one of the better comedies on Netflix. So I went, well, why not? I mean, why not indeed, right? It's about Will Ferrell.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Hey, it was an unverified website, and it certainly wasn't one of us. Now,
It's about Will Ferrell and Rachel McAdams, and they're in Iceland, set in Iceland, yep. right? And they're this duo called the Fire Saga or some shit, right? And they're not very good, and everyone hates them, but they make their way into the Eurovision Song Contest.
Of course
and it's
they
a
do.
It's a musical comedy sort of
Thank
thing.
Fuck, I've won.
Oh,
this.
Yes. Now, initially, I'll tell you this, all right? Initially, I thought it was shit. I thought it was an unusual, like, Icelandic jokes that did not land. The music was stupid for a while. I left, okay? I fucked off. I turned it off.
And then you went, Jesus, I still got to watch one more film.
That's exactly what happened. Actually, in between this time and that thing, I realized that I wanted a sandwich. And then I came back.
yeah.
So then I picked it up. I was like, oh, actually, this is a little bit more funny. I'm noticing that Rachel McAdams is good at humor. And I'm noticing that Will Ferrell isn't at least playing a complete idiot like he always is.
Right.
He's kind of, but not a lot, right? And Pierce Brosnan's in this one too, mate.
Ooh.
So anyway.
2 out of 3, the bottom of the list.
Oh, Brett. I will say this. The music is good for what it is, all right? A few laughs here and there. Production value very high. It actually looks quite good.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it fucking outstays its welcome.
Oh, shock right? horror.
And if you don't
any
like...
any comedy that goes more than 100 minutes. Arguably also any horror, with some exceptions. Same
well,
thing.
That's it. It's like 2 hours, man. So like, fuck this shit. It was just too much. And I was like, you know what? And I was out. So this is a piece of shit, but I wasn't expecting much. Hence, it's number 8.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. We haven't seen any of each other's films. I wonder if you've seen my number 7. It's also a Netflix film. It's a documentary. It's called Seaspiracy.
No, bring it on.
Seaspiracy is directed and stars Ali Tabrizi. And therein is the big problem with Seaspiracy.
You can't pronounce his name?
Yes. It's Tabrizi, fuck you.
What I'm like is that I made you look. All right, go ahead.
Long story short, this is a guy who sets out to sort of show how, what's sustainable fishing? Can we have sustainable fishing?
Oh.
And in the process discovers there is all kinds of rorts and fucking conspiracies around keeping fishing going, when the bottom line is there is no sustainable fishing. If you think you are doing the
really?
World a favor by eating fish and not meat, according to this film, you're fucking an idiot.
You're eating all the fish and they're going to go soon. Is that right? They're
well,
going to be gone.
Basically, dolphin safe fucking fishing nets and whatever.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee that the dolphin's safe. In fact, he found evidence to suggest lots of dolphins get killed and the captains of the ship just go, fuck yeah, we killed no dolphins. That kind
Dirty
of shit.
Bastards. Mm-hmm. Really?
So that part's really interesting.
Wow.
And disconcerting.
No,
and
that gives
really
me the shits,
worrying. And it deserves to be watched on that level. What doesn't work is he keeps inserting himself straight into the narrative. It's a vanity project and he makes it about himself.
Ugh.
And he's like, we traveled with my girlfriend who shot a lot of the footage of when he's in the shot.
Oh my God.
His girlfriend shooting it. And it's just, he keeps inserting himself front and center. I wondered what this would mean. So I went off and spoke to fucking this people. And these people basically gave me these answers. Then we cut to.
Oh my God. He sounds like Ross Kemp. Have you ever seen that show?
No.
Oh, anyway.
I mean, I'm doing it.
Yeah,
exaggeration.
No, but like that's, there's a lot like that. Anyway, please. Oh, really?
It's disconcerting. And it's really off-putting because it's too much of him. Present the facts. Yes.
Make it
you
like
went,
Attenborough. Yes.
Because it's a documentary, right? But it's a documentary which is clearly from his narrative perspective, so it loses some power.
See, this is the problem. All documentaries have an objective that they make you want to look at.
But I think the best documentaries straddle the middle line.
Yes, they give you both sides, and it's like, what do you think, right? But that hardly
Make your own
case.
Mind up.
It needs a political position, so it always has one side. But don't put yourself in there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's shit.
So I flat bang, 2.5 stars. The topic itself is 4 stars. The execution is 1.5 stars. So I landed on 2.5.
Do I have to fucking stop eating fish now?
Well, if you believe this film, absolutely yes.
Fucking hell.
So you can't eat red meat and you can't eat animals and you can't eat fish. So be a vegetarian and die of anemia by the time you're fucking 60.
Well, I know many successful vegans, so I'm saying, you know. But anyway. All right, my number 7, everyone. Oh, God, here's what I've been doing the week, y'all. So I'm watching Joe Rogan, right? On Spotify. And
and when you say, I struggled to watch 10 extra films.
No.
But I managed to watch / listen to 4 hours of Joe Rogan every week.
Because you can put it on while you're working, Paul.
Wayne's bosses? Sorry.
I do it at work anyway. I'm like, plug in there. Anyway, the point is, Quentin Tarantino is then talking to Joe Rogan about how much he hates CGI. And then he mentions this film, Paul, which you mentioned earlier, Cutthroat Island.
All right, okay.
He said, he goes, yeah, Cutthroat Island, man. Like, it bankrupted the studio. It didn't work that year, whatever. But because everything was real, you're looking at it, and it's like Gina, what's her name, is totally actually in that scene, and the buildings are real, and the town is real, and so on. So I thought, oh, screw it. I've never seen that. I'm going to watch it. That was a mistake! Do you remember remember what we thought about this film back in the day, Paul?
I don't know if I've seen the whole thing.
Good, and I'll tell you why. Because I remember, this is, picture it, everyone. Sicily. Right? Me and Paul are just at the cinema in the city center in Hay Street. I remember this for some reason, okay? And we're talking, because back then there was no fucking internet, so we must have seen it on Entertainment Tonight or some shit, right? And Paul said, hey, I heard they're making a movie called Crusade with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Oh, yes. Do you remember this?
Yes.
And we were like, what? Ooh, and we were all fucking nerds, so we were like, that sounds great, wicked. And then later on, we hear that that movie got canceled because they went all in on Cutthroat Island and gave it like a 200 whatever.
Was it Carolco?
It was Carolco. Yeah, yeah. All right? This is why. This movie here is so, like, it's Gina Davis isn't quite selling this ravishingly dangerous pirate. That's the pirate movie, of course. And it does look good. Seems to be a lot of overly long sweeping shots of the boats. Obviously, there's, you know, we got a budget, we got a real boat. It's a real boat on the real water.
Yeah, they didn't have drones back in those days. It's fucking helicopter shots.
Yes, exactly. Oh my God, you're right. Yeah, so this is all pretty cool shit. Now, yes, it's cool that Gina Davis is doing the stunts. They're all bloodless kills.
Shock horror.
You can see the money, but it looks a little bit 90s. That's fine. Very talky and very long. Frank Langella is the bad guy. Matthew Modine is the...
Oh, so Matthew Modine's in it, right?
Yeah, he's
so it kind of killed his career. It kind of stole Gina Davis's career, and it absolutely killed Rennie Harlan's career.
Yes. He's doing fucking Misfits, mate.
So Rennie Harlan is two films away. His bottom
I four. Know, bro. And check this out. This is the... I'm going to spoil this because no one cares, right? At the end, the bad guy gets his, Frank Langella, by happening to stand in front of a cannon.
Oh, as you do.
As you do. Mm. Now, the cannon is covered by a tarp or something, but it's still a cannon. Matthew Modine is on the floor. Or is it Gina Davis? One of the heroes. I
imagine she killed him.
Yeah, I think she would have. Yeah. So she's there, and... as he's saying his final bad guy thing, like, haha, I got you, because you're on the floor now, and I'm about to run you through with my sword.
Bloodlessly.
Yes. Gina Davis pulls away the tarp. She sees there's a cannon there. Frank Langella sees there's a cannon there. And she has time to quip some shit before lighting the fuse and blowing him away. He could have literally sidestepped it within... he had seconds to sidestep. It's so shit, and it's so long. Yeah, forget it, everyone. This is why it tanked, everyone.
Fair enough. Again, score, Wayne. What would you give it?
Oh, fuck. Oh, look, it was good. I'll give it a 2 out of 10. So it's that 1 star.
Holy shit. So all 4 of your films have been 1 star and below.
I'm telling you, Paul, it was a tough fucking couple of weeks.
Well, I'm borderline recommending my number 6.
Whoops.
Right? So that's obviously I've chosen wisely or just watched way more films than you because I could have picked 10 shit films.
Or chosen linearly. Go on.
My number 6 is a film called Spontaneous. Hmm. It's directed by someone named Brian Duffield and stars... probably no one that you'll have heard from. Although I think Catherine Langford might be a Perth actress who was on 13 Reasons Why.
Okay.
Charlie Plummer, who I've got to assume is a relation.
Christopher.
Christopher, thank you, who just died.
Oh, nice.
And Piper Perabo is Perabo. Yeah. Well, is the mum in the movie. So.
Oh, wow.
Other than that, it's not about the cast. It's about the story. This film is basically a rom-com.
Oh, called Spontaneous. Yep,
and it's based around a high school, right? Mm-hmm. So they're in the final year of high school. Where kids just start exploding spontaneously.
I was just going to say to you, Paul, a rom-com, how come I haven't heard of it? Everyone starts exploding, Wayne. Okay. Right.
The first two-thirds of this film are fucking amazing.
What?
I have to say, she is a great character. They really do characterizations well in this movie. Hats off to the screenwriter who I'm now going to look up, which is director Brian Duffield himself and co-written by Aaron Starmer. Full credit. They written... kids, like, you know, adolescent kids, 17, coming on 18-year-olds, really, really well, at least in terms of my 40,
authentic looking
mid-40s year-old body.
Sure.
And mind, they really bounce off each other well. It's funny. It's quippy. It's how they're coping with this trauma that any of them could explode at any point in time.
Hmm.
Right? The government gets involved. They're doing experiments, whatever. It's so weird and out there. And then something happens at the end of the second act, which just sends the film in a different direction. Right.
And one that you didn't care for?
I didn't. It just lost all the charm. It's hard to imagine. And I know it just perfectly holds that divide between, well, this is traumatic kids exploding, right?
Yeah.
Versus the love story that develops between two characters.
Wait, is it funny? You said rom-com.
It's funny.
It's funny.
Legitimately funny. She is she's great, Catherine Langford, in this movie.
Yeah.
And her character is excellent. So I recommend this film to you.
Okay, no.
And I recommend it to anyone who's into this kind of thing, who's prepared to be a little left to center with.
Is the explosion, how is it handled? Dramatically or funnily? Or both.
Both, depending on the person who explodes.
Okay. Look, you said rom-com, so I'll watch it. What? Spontaneous. Okay.
It's called Spontaneous, yeah.
I'm interested. Okay, good.
There we are.
Not bad. Now, Everyone, there was a film back in the day that Paul and our other friend Christian, who was once on the show, went to see. And they've told me about it for years, but I never actually saw it. It's called It's called Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai.
No,
I've never seen it.
What? You've talked about this fucking film for you fucking know 10 minutes driving shit?
Because Paul told me about that and I pretended that I knew it.
Oh my God.
No, no, actually, you know, I wasn't pretending that I knew it. I actually just referenced it because I knew that was a feature of the film. Right?
So, I felt betrayed. I felt hurt.
I never told you that I saw it. I just joked with you on it and then it became like you assumed I saw it.
Did you really stick the fingertip in?
No, that was a tree. Yes, everyone.
Hot damn!
This movie
not funny. Those jokes are not funny. I'm taking that back.
No, they're funny. So anyway, everyone, Ghost Dog is about Forrest Whitaker, who stars as a mysterious ghost dog, a hitman, who can somehow move quite quickly despite being bigger than this house.
How bad is your list? This is number six.
Bro. I've told you, man, okay? He works for the mafia. He follows this ancient samurai code and some bullshit. It is so on the nose. And of course, it is directed by Jim Jarmusch.
Wayne's favorite.
Who is the most affected human on the planet who will not see Star Wars just for spite because I've got crazy hair and I'm alternative. Okay, that's him. All right. Critics have noticed that this...
I stand resolute, motherfucker!
All right, everyone. It's shit. All right. This samurai thing is, and the ethos is just bullshit. It does not fit at all. Forrest Whitaker goes around, yes, driving in a car, and he puts a CD in and it goes for the whole song. Just really, no, this is the most like pretentious, self-indulgent, self-congratulatory filmmaking, right? I skipped through that shit. I don't give a fuck.
Of course you could. Right? You could.
It made it so much better.
There's
right?
no need to watch it.
And there's several of those scenes, all right? So Jarmusch like holds on to, apart from that, every scene he holds it too long. It's just
how
shit.
Well does he sheath his fucking gun?
Oh, God. All right, now I forgot that you said that until I saw it. What happens is Forrest Whitaker, who is I guess trying to emulate the samurai, has a gun. It's an automatic with a long silencer. Okay, he's got a hip holster, shoulder holster, right? And when he puts his gun away, he whips it around. I guess what one would think a samurai would do after you cut someone, you're supposed to flick your blade and then sweep it around and put it back in its scabbard. He does this fat guy thing where he's like, wob, 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 wob. It's like fucking shit. I'm like, and the thing is, he does it like so. Listen, as a larger man myself, I think that, you know, it's like, I know what it looks like when you try shit and you're fat, all right? It's just not so good, all right? And the thing is, he tries to do it like in line. Like he's at the end of the scene, he's saying something and he goes, boom, right? And the thing, and this is what really gets the ball. It's not done well. If you have to twirl a gun, let me tell you, I can twirl guns like Sammy Davis Jr., bitch. All right? I can fucking do that shit, all right? You twirl it around the trigger guard and it whips around. You know what he's doing? He's just waving it in the air. It's shit. It's not artful. It's just, it really looks bad, eh? It's
hot so damn.
And none of this shit works, and it is completely contrived. And the mafia guys are the dumbest cunts I've ever met. All right. So, anyway, I knew I'd hate it, but I didn't know I'd hate it this much. Having said that,
what do you give it as a score?
Oh
this
shit!
This is number six, ladies and gentlemen. This is the worst list we've ever seen on the show.
I reckon.
As in, like the lowest score.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, it's a good 38. Oh, 35 maybe. 35, man.
So right around between 1.5, 2 stars.
Yeah. Okay. That's my number six. My number six, see? And obviously, I don't recommend any of these.
I kind of recommend Spontaneous to the right person. I also recommend my number five to the right person.
Ah, see?
Right?
Now you're getting it.
Yeah.
You can't recommend it.
Four through one, hard recommend.
To anyone on the planet.
To everyone.
Okay.
Even you, motherfucker.
Well, still, you're understanding the nuance I'm talking about. Go on.
My number five is the recent Netflix horror film.
Oh, fuck off.
Called Fear Street Part 1, 1984. I briefly spoke about it last week on the top 10 female directed films because it's directed by a female.
Bring it.
Right. And basically, it's based on R.L. Stine's series of novels back in the,
early
90s. Let me be very clear. Heard some podcasters who I like and respect. Gerald from Two Peas on Podcast, aforementioned.
Mm-hmm.
Justin from the Epic Film Guys.
Right.
Didn't love this film particularly much. Right?
And those are the peeps for this.
Yeah, they're both horror guys.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a horror guy. It's not my t-shirt. It's Gerald's. Sorry, Peyton. Apologies. You know.
Go on.
Don't sue me, Gerald. But this film, I think what they disagree with. I think this film established its characters very well.
Okay.
I think this film made you care about its five central characters and you did not want any of them to die.
All right.
So when they do, it fucking like, oh, damn.
And did you...
And that is one half of what a horror film needs to do.
Okay.
The other half is either it needs to scare you or gross you out.
Now, what's the plot, real quick?
The plot is a town or two towns right next to each other. One town, I think it's called Shady Side or something. I forget what the name is.
Yeah.
And then Sunny something. Yeah. Sunnydale.
Yep.
With Sunny Vale or Sunny Side or what the fuck. All this bad shit happens on the shady side of things. Like multiple spree killers, multiple homicidal maniacs over the years.
Yeah.
And these group of kids basically discover there's a witch who was killed in the 1600s, 17th century.
In the Shady Side?
Yep. Who holds a grudge against them and is somehow supernaturally bringing back these, basically possessing people.
To do bad shit.
To do bad shit and then can bring them back from the dead after they're dead to continue doing bad shit.
Huh.
And it has, the first scene of the film is way too scream. It's way too scream.
Okay.
There is 4,000 needle drops from that era. Except half the songs are from after 1994. They're the problems of the film. But what it does very well is this establishes these characters you give a shit about. And when they die, you're like, oh, damn.
So what rating would you give this one?
3.5. 3.5 stars.
That's actually pretty good.
Yeah, very good.
All right.
But if you're not a horror film fan, don't bother. If you are a horror film fan, absolutely give this a go. I've since seen the second one, which I'm not shoehorning in here. Nowhere near as good. In fact, it really lets the team down. So my enthusiasm for the third, because this, I should mention, they're releasing one a week for 3 weeks, and they made all three pre-produced.
Three movies?
Yeah.
Boom.
Wow. So it's a trilogy. They come out within 14 days of each other. Oh, that's pretty amazing.
That's actually weird.
It's awesome. Because like...
Yeah, I know. You had to wait
no
3 years.
No matter how dark I am on the number 2, I'm watching number 3 to see how it all ends up, you know?
Shit. Okay, that's cool. Very nice. Okay, everyone, my number 5. So I was on a date, and this girl was... quite arty. And we got into this conversation about 90s cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And she recommended that I watch a film called The Daytrippers. Have you heard of this film?
No, I don't. Maybe.
It's got Stanley Tucci, Parker Posey, Hope Davis, Anna Mira. You know that older? I'm not sure if you know that. But it's a 90s film, right?
Okay.
And it's also got Liev Schreiber in it, okay? And it's about like this family that, well, this one girl, she discovers a love letter from her husband, Stanley Tucci, that looks like he might be cheating on her. Her whole family, including Liv, you know, Schreiber and all these people, they actually go with her to basically travel around New York to try and do some detective shit and figure out where this guy is and what that means and is he cheating on her and that kind of shit.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Uh-huh. So it's definitely one of those, you know, like it's a 90s drama sort of thing, quirky, this, that, whatever. I can tell you that it's initially a little walkie-talkie, but then it does get a bit more interesting with the prospect of cheating partners. And then there's the bragging dudes in the 90s, not the 80s, but the 90s, in office talking about his sex life and shit like that, making it sort of funny stuff. And it is kind of fun because if you like New York like I do, I think you do too as well, it's kind of fun to watch. 90s New York looks a certain way. It looks like Friends or the external shots of Friends, right?
Okay.
And it's actually a nice, interesting movie. It's probably more interesting as, like, watching it now, you can tell in 90s movies. 90s movies look like 90s movies. Everyone's suit's too big. You know, I talk about that all the time. But the bigger problem with it is that Anna Mira, who's this, the Harrod and Fishwife mother, is doing a wonderful job of being an annoying bitch, right? And she does too good a job, and it kind of puts you off a bit. So that's the only problem with the film, but it's a classic, apparently.
Well, that's the only problem. So do you recommend it?
I recommend it to you if you're my age and me in a certain mood. It's actually a Criterion Collection movie, Paul. You know that? It's one of those things.
So is Armageddon.
Which we like.
Love.
There you go. So there you are. Yes, The Daytrippers. Old school. 90s. Word.
All right. My number 4 is the best animated film of 2021 thus far. I struggle to think that there will be a better one that is released. It's The Mitchells versus The Machines. Also dropped to Netflix.
What was that? Where are you hearing about this shit?
Wait, how have you not heard of this film?
I've not heard of this at all.
Do you or do you not do a movie and TV reviews podcast?
I do, and I'm very selective. As you can see from my list.
Right. Basically, every film from here on out
you recommend.
You need to watch.
Okay, so Mitchell?
The Mitchells versus The Machines.
Yes, go on.
This is produced by Miller and Lord.
Oh, shit.
Yep.
Oh,
and
shit.
It is an animated film which has not stylings like Spider-Verse, but takes chances like Spider-Verse. It's directed by Michael Rianda, and someone you probably never heard of before, neither have I. The voice cast includes Danny McBride.
Well,
Maya Rudolph, Olivia Colman.
Wow.
Right? John Legend.
Holy shit.
Right? So there's singing some, there. No, does not sing.
Oh, shit.
Basically, it follows an everyday American family with all their normal everyday problems.
Yeah.
Who happen to be the only chance the Earth has to strike back against AI, which takes over the world in the form of a new, basically an iPhone.
Okay.
Which then, which is designed to connect into all electrical appliances and run them.
Mm.
And when it gets discarded by its creator for supposedly the next best version, decides fuck this and decides to eliminate all of humanity.
Wow. And the animation style itself, pleasant to watch, would you say?
Yeah. Well, it's very out there, very different.
It is different. Okay.
Yep.
So it's trying something.
It's trying something, which I think it succeeds with. Most importantly, it has the heartwarming element and it's funny. And very unlike important. Most comedies, this film, the comedy builds throughout it.
Excellent. So that is difficult
to do. The last half an hour, last half of it was way funnier than the first half, because halfway through I'm like, it's good, but it's not great. By the end of the film, I'm like, I'm on board. This is a good movie. You should absolutely check it out. I don't want to spoil anything.
I will. More I will. That. No, if you say, Lord Miller, yeah, I'll watch that shit. The Mitchells versus the Machines.
I think you'll dig it.
Nice one.
There we are.
Cool. My number four, recently I saw a podcast with Kevin Smith and he...
Shock horror.
I know, I do it all the time.
Wait, Kevin Smith was on a podcast?
Very rare. And his co-host, Mark Bernardin, he writes for the LA Times and he ranked the Steven Spielberg films first to worst. Number seven came in at Lincoln. You remember Lincoln? Yeah, TV show? Yep. I mean the movie Lincoln?
I've never... Well, thank you for making
thank
that
you.
Mistake.
Welcome.
I've never seen it. It was too long. And I'm surprised that you went all in on this film.
Because it's so long and I had limited time.
3 hours and so many
more
minutes.
It's so long, dude. Oh my God. Look, it opens pretty harsh. It's a civil war battle. Nothing like Saving Private Ryan. But like, it's people in the mud getting trampled on. All that sort of shit, right? Then it goes on to be a movie about passing a bill, Paul. It's about passing a bill. That's it.
Is that a euphemism?
Nope. He's actually writing a fucking
I'm
law
thinking
I'm bill.
I'm going to have to pass a bill myself fairly shortly.
You know what? If it had been about taking a shit, it would have been one shorter and two better. No, you know what? It's not bad. Daniel Day-Lewis is doing everything he can. It's amazing. He plays Lincoln with a high-pitched voice because apparently Lincoln had one.
Right.
The high-pitched, a little bit high-pitched. Sally Field is like his wife and it's all that sort of shit. And it is you see him as a father, as a husband, as a charming public official that, makes jokes with his colleagues and citizens. That's kind of cool, because you can say, oh, yeah, he's a president. He probably is charming, whatever, right?
With the exception of one or two recent presidents, they now, are charming.
This is, funnily enough, you know what? I would actually say that I hate Trump, but he's charming. Like he charms his masses. Like he's like, whatever.
Let's not get into it.
I know. All right. Not to me, but to people, So, but this is the interesting thing, right? Spielberg, you can tell what Spielberg's saying here. And it's like, look, the American political system is not perfect like no political system is.
No, of course not.
However, I do believe in it. The thing that needs to happen does eventually happen. All right.
What, he gets shot?
Well, no. The passing of the bill to free slavery, right? To abolish slavery.
Yep.
Ironically, it was the Republicans that put that together. The Democrats fought it.
So wow.
I know. I was like, ooh, look at that shit. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but I remember looking at it going, when he made this film, however many, 20, whenever it was, a while back, this is a long time ago. I didn't write down
why
the year.
Why would you go anywhere else for your reviews?
At least 10 years, I'm thinking, right? So...
yeah, it is at least 20 years
but
old.
What would he
I'd say early 2000s.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So I'm thinking to myself, what did Spielberg think during the Trump administration though? Because literally all the stuff he's saying in this didn't happen and was proven to not be kind of effective. So that's the thing about it. It is just too long though. That's the thing. It's a triumph.
2012.
Bugger me. All right, so yes. So that's about 9 years ago?
Yes, correct. Well done. You can do
that. Look at that. It's a bit of maths. Yeah, fantastic. Yes, triumph dramatically, but unless you're a history buff, no.
Okay, I've heard it's really boring.
It really is.
But Mark Bernardin disagrees. Fair enough. My number three is not really boring. It has lots and lots of needle drops, not unlike Fear Street Part 1, 1994. But this is now my daughter, as she has proudly proclaimed 3 times this week, favorite film of all time. It's Cruella.
Whoa, what number is this?
3.
Bitch, please.
Took her to see it at the cinema, even though we could have watched it at home on Disney Plus, but decided to make the trek there. And
it's good?
It's very good.
Shit on me.
It's very good. I think I may have seen 101 Dalmatians maybe once a long, long... I don't remember anything about
it. The cartoon?
I know, yeah. And then there was remade with Glenn Close.
Yep.
And I Glenn Close is an executive producer on this film as well, so she obviously has some tie into it or some
stake. Is it a sequel?
No, it's a it's basically a live-action prequel to how does Cruella become the villain that she becomes.
Okay, good.
Except it really softens it. So if you're not okay with revisionist kind of history, because she's not the crazy of the cartoon, right?
Beautiful.
But what she is an understandably traumatized child.
Oh, it's played... Oh.
Right the way from her childhood all the way through until her adult years. Emma Stone is good. Emma Thompson is fantastic in this movie.
Emma Thompson?
Emma Thompson's in it. It's directed by Craig Gillespie, who did I, Tonya.
Yeah, yeah. And, oh, shit. That's a great film.
That's a really good film. This is on par, if not better.
Holy shit.
As far as I'm concerned, because it's got he's a really cinematic director, I think. He has some wonderful shots. There's some great one-shots in this movie.
Yeah, no, I think it was beautiful.
The CG is good, although you can tell it's CG through the course of the film. Yeah. But the characters you care about, and you kind of understand where she's coming from, and you want her to succeed, and it works for the kids, clearly. My daughter loves the film. I really enjoyed it. It blew me away in terms of I was expecting to be like, something to do with my kid. She'll appreciate it. I'll be bored, but I wasn't.
Man, when a kid's film, ostensibly, like, is actually something that entertains you, that's fucking magic.
Yeah. This film is in my top 10 films of the year at this point in time.
Boom. Cruella.
Yeah, Cruella. Well worth checking out. Do
nice
so.
One. Okay. My number three is a Benedict Cumberbatch film.
Oh.
It's called The Courier.
Okay. Heard of it. Haven't watched it.
Okay. Now, it's about this... it's actually a true story of a British businessman who's helped MI6 penetrate the Soviet nuclear program during the Cold War. And he did that by providing crucial intelligence that ended the Cuban Missile Crisis. Benedict Cumberbatch, obviously, is the lead character. He's the guy who really did exist. It is filmed in a very... this is odd. I actually wrote this note down. For some reason, I don't know what lens or camera they're using or whatever, but the aspect or something makes it look very grand. It's a very big-looking movie, and it's, like, very wide. The fabulous Mrs. Maisel chick is in it. Her name is... I don't know her name. Anyway,
Mrs. Maisel.
I've listed her as the Mrs. Maisel chick, and she's great in it. She's really, really great. Rachel Brosnahan. There, okay? I got it.
Or as Rachel Brosnahan is now thinking,
Vindication.
I mean, I would think that if I was her.
Wayne from the Countdown podcast knows my name.
She's adorable. All right. Anyway, I do think the dramatic scenes lagged a little bit, but they were amazing performances. Everyone's delightfully English. It's very nice to watch. I like the people.
Fair enough.
And so it shows you how you're added because a lot of bad things happen to him. There's a lot of jail type stuff that happens to him. And you can see that he's, even though they're giving him shit to eat and stuff, he'll just like eat it. And his attitude is basically what gets him through all of this nasty shit. And at the end of the film, there is actual footage of the real guy.
As there often is in these films, yep.
But he's a cool motherfucker, man. He's actually talking to the cameras and he's still joshing after all this shit he went through. He's a real cool motherfucker. So that made me like the movie more. So The Courier, I absolutely recommend.
You do recommend it?
I do.
But you're number one, you're not sure you recommend.
That's right, Paul. It's non-linear. Okay? I will tell you, though, that it's a little long in places, but it's still a really great film. So there you go. The Courier. Do recommend. Paul, not comprehending any of my shit.
It's not rocket science.
It is.
The higher on your list, the more recommended it is.
I think you'll find that my... No, not at all. Not
you
at
can't
all.
Handle the truth.
Do I have to go over this again? Oh, some shit right. Only I like and I know it. Clap your hands.
My number two, I recommend to everyone, to all, please. Including Wayne.
Okay.
Idiot, the man that he is. It's a Danish film. It's directed by Anders Thomas Jensen. It stars Mads Mikkelsen. Ooh. It's called Riders of Justice.
Riders of Justice.
Yep. And it's basically a film which follows, after a tragedy, Mads Mikkelsen returns from the army to help raise his child, or to raise his teenage daughter.
Present day?
Yeah, present day.
Yeah.
And then these... weirdly, they're not weird. They are geniuses who are, to varying degrees, on the spectrum.
Okay.
Come to him and say, the tragedy that befell your wife was not a tragedy/accident. It was planned. And it was planned by a motorcycle gang.
What?
Called the Riders of Justice.
Okay.
And so Mads Mikkelsen, being this returned vet, now it becomes a revenge thriller.
Oh.
It's a dark comedy.
Really?
It is a borderline action film in a couple of sequences, but don't go in expecting an action film. Go in expecting a comedic dark thriller.
Yeah.
And I think you'll have a really great time with this movie.
Is it in Nordic? Is it like, yeah?
It's in Danish.
Danish, right? Wow.
Check it out. It is.
I've never heard of it.
I don't want to spoil any more than that.
Riders of Justice.
Yeah, I'll check the shit out of this.
It's got a guy who looks a lot like Seth Rogen.
Oh, really?
actually, he looks more like Evan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor.
Sorry, yes.
Yeah.
Ewan McGregor. as the second kind of lead in the film.
Interesting. That's a good. Where'd you hear about this?
I heard about it online. Watched the trailer. Thought it looks cool. Check it out.
Very nice.
Still to come at the cinemas, but you can check it out now.
Say no more about that. Okay.
And you know what? It also has a bloke looks a little bit like, to be honest, a little bit like, what's his name? James from Top Gear.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh.
James May.
Yep.
I would happily and will happily go and see this again when it comes out if I can take someone who hasn't seen it yet.
Dude, that's cool. Like foreign film.
I say this, but you can actually buy it to stream. So.
Okay, word. Yep. Cool. Nice. My number two, speaking of hearing about shit, is Bo Burnham Inside.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I didn't actually know what this was, and I was just going off the advice of some of our patrons.
Lots of people are raving
in particular. Yeah, Dave Powell, he was into that. It is a comedy special, sort of. It is filmed by comedian Bo Burnham, who was in Promising Young Woman.
Yep. And did he direct Eighth Grade?
You may well do. He's a very talented young fella.
Really?
He is basically his work, which he did during lockdown. So he did writing, he shot it, he performed it, he edited it himself. It's just a room in his house, and he's obviously processing the same thing we all had to process during lockdown, his loneliness, his feelings of isolation, FaceTiming with his mom. And I assumed it would be a comedy special. I thought he was doing comedy in, that was what was brave. There's no audience, you know? Although I knew there'd be some music. Well, I should say this. The music it is actually mostly, Paul, you'd hate this. It's a musical. It's basically a musical.
Oh, really?
Right?
So I'd hate it.
Well.
But is it a musical like, Is it comedic songs?
Comedic songs.
Oh, that's fine. That's not a musical. Like, there's a big difference between we're all parading and dancing and we are telling the plot of the film versus a performance in a film.
That in that case, maybe, because I forget, you hate the conceit of musicals.
Yes.
Where people break into songs. Yes.
Whereas something like Sing Street, awesome.
Oh, yeah, that's in context. Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's fine. So that's what he did. So the music he's written is actually good. He's really talented.
Yep.
And he's clearly, good at, he's a musician. There's a song which...
Easiest talented is the Have You Checked Your Butthole guy.
No, the Have You Checked Your Butthole is funnier. This guy is more introspective. But he does do a song called A White Woman's Instagram, which is actually on... I think someone posted it on the community, on the listener community.
Oh, is that what that joke was? Right.
Yeah, dude, if you listen to the song and watch the bit of the movie that he does this in, right? It is the most cutting call out of the typical white woman Instagram, where it's like he's talking about, the shots they put with them in coffee and got latte art and there's fucking neon and, a poem written on the beach, all that sort of shit. Now,
on that note, do you think the Have You Checked Your Butthole guy would come on the show if we asked him?
Tom Cardi?
Yeah.
Why not? But guys, everyone, all week we've been singing.
All go and check.
Yeah, go Google Tom Cardi butthole. All right.
Yep. That song's the best song.
That is the best song. He also did the Yeah, I Can't one, which I also posted. So it is.
And he did two versions of that.
I know.
I'm a cunt. And then he did the Aussie version, which is you're a cunt.
Yes, which is hilarious. The you're a cunt one works better, in my opinion. But yeah, sorry. The song has been so in our heads all week. Forget about it. Yes. So anyway, this song here, Paul, I reckon there are some very clever ideas. He does a reaction video within a video where he shoots a video, then it goes to inset, then he reacts to that video in the same frame, then another one. I don't know how he did it. It's actually, there would have been quite a lot of writing involved. And I think it shows you how much you have to think if you're a comedian or an artist or something like that. I will tell you, probably was a little bit singy for me and I was expecting something else, but I know that the artistic merit here is actually high, so I do recommend it if...
Holy shit.
If you enjoy this quirky type of thing. It is not a film. It is not a movie. There's no story. It's a performance. So it's a little like watching Hamilton in a way, like the movie. So, except it's just on... it's interesting. How's that? It's interesting. You look for something different, then go for it.
Fair enough. All right. So, well, we are down to...
The ones, mate.
The ones. I guess we can run back through the list.
Sure, why not?
My number 10, piece of shit, Great White. Number 9, The Woman in the Window, also a piece of shit. 8, a disappointing piece of shit, Those Who Wish Me Dead. 7, wouldn't have been a shit if the director hadn't put himself in the middle of it, Seaspiracy. 6, no longer shit, Spontaneous. 5, Fear Street, Part 1, colon 1994. Not at all shit.
Oh, good.
4, Mitchell vs. the Machine, excellent. Do check it out, great animated film. 3, Cruella, surprisingly awesome. 2, Rise of Justice, the best foreign film I've seen this year by a long, long way. And my number 1 is a film which won Academy Award for Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Oh.
It's called The Father. It also won Best Adapted Screenplay. is directed by Florian Zeller in their direct her no her his I don't know shit his directorial debut, and it's basically a film about dementia.
Wow.
And it is the scariest fucking movie ever seen.
That's why I didn't want to watch it.
That is not a horror film. It is terrifying.
Oh, man.
And Sir Anthony Hopkins is brilliant. I know. I get it. I understand. Chadwick Boseman, such a loss, should have won on the basis of we'll never see something from him ever again. And it's awful.
Is
and
he in
it
this?
Sucks. No, no, no.
Oh.
Do you remember the Academy Awards controversy?
Yeah.
They reformatted the entire thing because they expected Chadwick Boseman to win the Best Actor award. He didn't. Anthony Hopkins wasn't even around and ready on camera.
Because it was COVID-y.
Because even he didn't get a chance because of Chadwick Boseman's performance in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
That's right.
Right? I think that's what it's called.
And he didn't get it though, did he?
He didn't get it. Sir Anthony Hopkins won it. I haven't seen Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, but I've seen The Father, and I need to compare.
What is it about his performance that impressed you?
Everything.
You just buy it?
This is a man who has dementia on screen. I have limited, thankfully, to this point in my life, experience of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw my grandmother go through it, and he personifies it far, almost more realistically than she lived it.
Yeah.
Like, because I got a very, limited perspective of that. Yeah. My other grandmother, likewise, the same thing. Doesn't bode well for me, let's be honest.
Oh, me neither, bro. My grandfather went that way.
Yep.
The thing is, you choose whether you die or lose your marbles. It's a fine line. It's a fine line.
it is. And that's what I'm saying. It's so horrifying. And it's all told from his perspective. Almost all told. There's a little bit from his daughter's perspective, which it flashes in and out of.
Oh, from his perspective.
Yeah. So things happen in the film and you're not sure whether it's real or it's not real.
Holy shit, really?
Whether, like, who's this person? And there's a woman, for example, in a scene in the film who says, "Dad, what are you calling me dad for? You're not my daughter." It's a completely different actress.
Oh, God.
But it's a different actress who looks a little bit like
Olivia Colman. Yeah, that's clever, man. Oh, wow. That's putting you right inside his head.
It's so good.
Dude.
And it's all based on a play. So it's all very much. There's like two sets in the entire film, but they're both internal and whatever else. He's looking out a window and whatever. It is absolutely devastating. It's one of the best films of the year.
Oh, God.
I understand why he won it.
Yeah.
Do check out The Father. Just be prepared to be harrowed.
Wow. How old Anthony these days, do you reckon?
I think he might have won the best. He might have been the oldest now winner of the Academy Award.
Octogenarian then.
I think he's late 80s.
Yeah. Wow.
Mid to late 80s.
Oh, God. We should all be so lucky.
Mm. He is astounding. Just incredible. Olivia Colman's very good. Everybody in this film is very good. But for a first time director to do this based off their own play, still, I know you know that.
No, it's hard to make. Yeah,
but you're not. It doesn't matter if you're a playwright. Doesn't mean you're a great director.
No,
but
you need a good cinematographer.
This guy,
but yeah,
nailed the shit out of it.
Boom.
So there we are.
Nice work. All right. From that high note, I'm now going to go through my list and try and give it a shit theme like Paul did.
Good luck.
Here we go. Number 10, the misshits. Number 9, occupation shitfall. Number 8, Eurovision shit contest. 7, Shitthroat Island.
That connotes some disturbing shit.
Oh yeah, but not as much as ghost shit, the way of the shit. And my number 5, the day shitters. Actually, that one was alright.
The day pisses.
Yeah, fortunately with 4 being Lincoln, I can't really make that a shit joke about that. Link shit. Yeah. It wasn't shit though. It was just.
Yeah, so okay, yeah. You do away with it now.
Okay. The Courier is number 3. Number 2 was Bone Burden Inside. And my number 1 is it's a film. This look, I came across this and I actually really loved it. Ride the Eagle is what it's called.
What?
That's right. It's got Jake Johnson, J.K. Simmons, and Susan Sarandon in it.
From when?
Well, technically, it hasn't been released yet. I happened to see a studio copy, Paul, and it's released on the 30th of July. So
excellent.
Excellent. Now, everyone, it's a movie that was shot during COVID in the States.
It's been nice this last episode of the show.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. Everyone, Jake Johnson plays this guy named Leaf, all right?
He was, his mother and him grew up in a cult, but because she's in a cult, she fucked off when he was a kid through Susan Sarandon. And she, they're now, he's now grown up and she's whatever, he hasn't seen her, he's estranged from her, whatever. She dies, so she leaves him a conditional inheritance. Before he can move into her beautiful Yosemite cabin, he has to complete these elaborate and sometimes dubious to-do lists. And I didn't notice this about the movie when I saw it. I read about it later that it was filmed during COVID. But it's just, a lot of the shots are just him and his dog. A lot of the shots are him and J.K. Simmons, who plays a really, really funny, like, gruff old man who's, like, pissed off and obviously was banging that dude's, Jake Johnson's mother. And is now, right. And he thinks that Jake Johnson is the young buck that she's fucking.
But it's his mom.
Initially, yeah, he doesn't know he's a son. So he goes, he calls her and goes, "Listen, sugar dick, she doesn't like you." It's really, really funny. It's really funny.
Okay.
It's played in a funny way, trust me. And we should all be called Sugar Dick Paul. So,
it's Wayne's goals in life.
Sugar Dick, imagine that? No, no. Okay. The treatment of this film, the music, the way it's filmed and everything, very looks good. Artful, but also in a way that's meaningful towards you. Great performances.
Okay.
Well-written show. Jake Johnson just talks to his dog when explaining his relationship with his mother, and it works. Weed is a theme in the movie. That's not the whole reason. It's not even, it's a very small part of the movie, right? And it's a little bit like, tonally it's a little bit like New Girl, but a little bit sweeter, like sweeter, not funnier. So I actually really like it. It's a good ass movie, and
okay.
it was fun to watch. Ride the Eagle.
We got there in the end. Wayne recommends this one definitely without doubt.
No.
This
one is recommended
less
to,
than The Courier, which was his number 3.
If you like festival films and you like that, this one is for you. But for most people that I would, like my boys or like, you know, some other people, I would say, no,
I've known Wayne. We've been friends for 30 years. I've known him for like 33. If you can work this shit out.
I think it makes complete sense.
Please write to thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
If you
hit
can
us up on Twitter @thecountdownpc. You can like and follow the show on Podbean. Leave a comment there about how to work out Wayne. Or in the Facebook, there's going to be links in the show notes. You can also follow ccradio.com.au where some other great shows, Believe and Comic Confidential. There we go. We've done that part now, Wayne. Excellent.
Thanks. And if you can teach Paul how to be a real boy. Just like send some code through to that. There's still same email addresses. Go for it. All right, that's it. Oh,
that's
Alice.
That's
it. That's
what about yours? No one mentions for the top 10, last 10.
No.
Let's get straight into it. Let's call the pop 10.
Talk about pop 10. Talk about pop 10.
Kicking off this week's pop 10 with the Movie Journey podcast. Hendo from there. The Tomorrow War. It's all right. It's basically every good alien sci-fi movie rolled into one, but nowhere near as good as any of them. 3 stars.
Yeah, defo.
28 Days Later said Kinky Boots. Super predictable, but it has enough heart. Young Chiwetel Ejiofor and Joel Edgerton give good performances.
I've heard of this show.
Yeah. The Cinema Guys, another one for Tomorrow War, had cool creatures and, well, it had cool creatures.
Yep. That's about it.
Thank you, Brad, for that. Movies After Work said Hamlet from 1921.
Oh, not the Mel Gibson one.
Silent film era gender swapper Shakespearean classic fails to adapt itself to the Bard, which I give due credit to because no one's ever gone that far back in terms of
no,
a review
hell no.
of the show. Jacob Sain on Twitter said Hellraiser starts off mildly crazy, keeps you guessing all the way through, then goes bananas at the end.
I take it you've seen this movie, Paul?
Pinhead is one of a kind. Of course I have. Of course I have. Matt from the Crossover Podcast said Desperado, always fun and stylish, but a Hall of Fame third act come apart.
Because of the very end, yeah, yes. You're right. Absolutely. Great movie. Desperado.
Now, in stark contrast to my review of Cruella, from Dan from the Netflix and Spiel podcast, patron to the show, Cruella, it's fine.
Good to have the other end.
Steve from the Everything I Learned from Movies podcast said, Ava, Chastain kicking ass, Malkovich, Colin Farrell, Common, Assassins. This should have been so good.
I liked Ava, man.
Yeah, you're the
I
only
liked it.
Fucking
what's
person
wrong with y'all, man?
In the
Come
world
on now,
who
damn.
Dug the shit out of shit. That movie. Stu from SWO Productions, SWO Productions, who I was on the podcast, it's going to be a few months before it comes out, this last week talking Sin City, a Dame to Kill For.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Best of the best. Peaks early with a truly glorious bar fight scene, then falls into a lull before a surprisingly good ending with emotion.
Are we talking about the Eric Roberts?
Yes. And-
Yeah, no, that's a great show. That's a great game show, Jones, baby.
From the Flick Watcher podcast, Fast 9, of all the craziness that happens in this movie, I can't get over the fact that young Jacob is way shorter than John Cena's Jacob. And this is a film where they fly a car into actual Space.
Yep. Shit.
Lou Fryer over the Facebook community said, awake. I really wish I wasn't awake when I watched this shower of piss. I'd rather shit in my hands and clap them than sit through this fucking film again.
That's one of those movies that's like, I got a joke I can make about this.
Chris Sutherland said, Outside the Wire. Wow, how bad can you make a movie? Sorry, how can you make a movie this bad?
Outside the Wire.
Yes, Anthony Mackie was on Netflix earlier in the year. We almost reviewed it, but I think those kind of reviews put us off.
Bugger me.
Nicholas Haskins from the Mr. Nikolai's podcast. And Are We the Dead? I tune in for a dumb B movie thrill ride and I got it. Emphasis on the dumb.
Are We Dead? Is that what it was?
Army of the Dead.
Army of the Dead. Oh, shit.
Sorry, it wasn't clear. Emphasis on the dumb, especially that script. But the effects and gore more than made up for it. Hell yeah, Nicholas. Thank you, sir. That's exactly where I went from.
Did you like it?
Yes. I gave it 3 stars.
Hmm.
David Powell, top little patron to the show. Said Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, one of the greatest family films of all time. Ian Fleming and Roald Dahl created a perfect musical, fairy tale, adventure, horror. Yes, horror. The child catcher can never be expunged from a child's nightmares.
And everyone wants a car that can fly.
That too, yes.
That's what I think.
Joe Ketchum from the Word Salad Podcast Network said, America, the motion picture sucks worse than America, the real country.
Ooh, harsh. He's an American lad, yes.
Yes,
so you can say whatever he wants.
Gold. Really, really well done. From Erica San Pedro, said, In the Heights, Rosa Diaz being all sassy, singing and dancing, just too weird.
I don't know this one.
Lin-Manuel.
Oh, Miranda one. Yes.
And let's wrap it up with Peter Grant. See, we need to talk about Kevin, because I talked about Kevin last week. Seriously, what a little cunt. And lastly, Blake Jarvis said, Black Widow, perfectly average, great score. I didn't mention the score by Lorne Balfay.
Oh, yeah.
I did enjoy the score, too.
And I forgot to mention that the opening credits to Black Widow, where it just gives you the whole story, pretty much. Very good. I thought it was good.
Yeah. I was a bit worried about my daughter not being able to keep up with all that. But anyway.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. All right. That's your take on some recent reviews. Thank you so much for getting back to us. Sorry for everyone we couldn't get to. That's all the time we have today on what is an episode that is running a little longer than usual.
It's because of me.
No, both of us.
Yeah, we talk.
We're all good. But these are fine. Like, this gives 20 different films reviewed today.
There you go.
Gives people a snapshot of what they should and perhaps shouldn't go to.
I eat my whole list.
Should, yeah, exactly. Should go to mine, not towards Wayne's list. All right, Wayne, what's happening next week for episode 329 on the podcast?
We are going to do the top 10 plane films.
That's right. And plane is in airplane films.
As opposed to a plank?
As opposed to a very even film.
Oh, like a tool.
And
like
board.
Yeah. Boring film. Oh, plane! Oh, right, of course. For that, yes. Too. So hang on, let's just fucking sort this out while we're here.
Airplane film. Has to have not just a plane flying in the background, Wayne.
All right, like wait a minute.
Boat list.
What about fucking helicopters? That's not a plane, bitch.
No.
So is that a plane? So no Airwolf or whatever?
Yeah, no Airwolf.
Even if there's a plane? Oh, okay. No. All right. It has to be primarily about a plane.
About a plane.
Okay, I think I'm clean.
All right, good.
Fair enough.
We've clarified that. Excellent. Now. So next week when you turn up with fucking whatever film which has a plane flying in the background and the characters remark on it, go, geez, that's a big plane. Yes, it is. We can all shit on you from a great height.
So if it's a movie with just one great plane scene, that's not it?
I would suggest you should lean heavier towards the plane.
All right, fine. All right, cool. Good to know.
That's it for us today.
Just thinking. It's great radio.
We need to get on and do the next thing we need to do in like 3 minutes. So, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
Hot damn!
Yep, there it is.
That'll do. We will catch you next time.